Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. If you've been a loyal listener, you've likely picked up on this already. I consider myself an iconoclast, meaning I'm a nonconformist, a questioner. I value personal sovereignty and freedom. Therefore, the Wealthy Wealthy podcast is about busting myths and taking things apart with people who see the world through a different lens. Most of the guests I've had on the show are also iconoclasts. They're countercultural thinkers who challenge the narrative and status quo in their fields. Personally, I never want to stop having challenging conversations with brave people who, like me, will always be willing to change their minds and listen to others' points of view. In this episode, I interviewed Dave Rubin, author of the New York Times bestseller, Don't Burn This Book. Dave is the creator and host of The Rubin Report, the most watched talk show about free speech and big ideas on YouTube with 1.2 million YouTube subscribers and over 275 million views. I like to think of his show as similar to mine in that he wants to interview anyone and everyone open-minded enough to have a challenging and enriching conversation. A former progressive turned classical liberal, he speaks to millions all over the world, and he's very entertaining because his background was stand-up comedy. Originally from Long Island, New York, he currently lives in LA with his husband David and their dog Emma. And if you'd like to know more about what yours truly has been up to lately, I invite you to visit sovereigntyacademy.com. Again, please enjoy my interview with Dave Rubin, whose birthday happens to be on the release date of this podcast. Happy birthday, Dave. Dave Rubin, thank you for being on the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. It's a real honor to be here with you today.
It's good to be with you.
All right, let's talk wealth. I love this subject. Well, it's wealth, and it's going to be in the context of a word. I've created a whole new brand, and almost a whole new business has come out of these times we're in right now. And it's called the Sovereignty Academy, and it's about sovereignty. And you're just such a representative of what this word stands for, and you even reference it in your book. So I would love to start off there. Like, when I say the word sovereignty, what does that mean to you?
Ooh, I like that as a first question. Well, I think more than anything else, it means owning yourself. If you're sovereign, that means you can stand alone and you can fight for yourself and you can figure out what you believe and you can earn money for yourself and take care of yourself. And then by extension, you end up taking care of the people around you and hopefully the community around you and everything else. But we could use a little more sovereignty these days. You know, I mean that at the individual level, which we're seeing right now is, you know, Corona has so many people upside down in so many ways, and people are suddenly realizing they shouldn't be so reliant on the systems that we just expected would always be there. But suddenly, you know, if you show up at the supermarket and they don't have paper towels, or more importantly, they don't have food or whatever it might be, well, you suddenly go, well, I need to take care of myself. So even what we're doing here, I'm in LA, I don't have a lot of property, but we've lined the sides of our house with planters, and we're growing broccoli and peppers and lettuce and all kinds of stuff. And to be sovereign is to be human. I mean, you're an individual first and everything grows from that. I think, unfortunately, much of mainstream media has it backwards, where it's somehow the system exists and you should just sort of be subordinate to the system. So being a sovereign individual is basically the most important thing you can be.
In that context of sovereignty, what are you noticing? Like, why is this, from your point of view, that we're just losing more and more of our sovereign rights, of our sovereign ways of making choices for ourselves and our own best interests?
Yeah, well, I'll give you the good part first, which is that I do think coronavirus and some of these authoritarian and sort of draconian laws and edicts, they're not even laws, in effect, they're just sort of government edicts, they are waking people up to what individual responsibility, what personal liberty, what sovereignty is. So I'm actually enthused at the moment. I even find this right now when I'm walking my dog, which is one of the few things we can legally do here in Los Angeles. When I'm walking my dog and I meet neighbors now, they'll say, oh, Dave, saw you on Fox News last night. I watched your show last week with Mike Rowe, this, that, the other thing. And what they're saying to me in effect is, you know, I'm thinking about these topics too. And that's not really what you think about from people in LA, right? We're a very, very blue city in a very, very blue state. And a lot of people really just sort of default are progressives. They are big government lefties. They don't really know why, but they just sort of are. So I'm actually pretty psyched that now when I walk around, more and more people are coming up to me and, like, you know, they'll kind of wink at me like, I get it too. Or, you know, just in effect, if somebody says to me, I saw you on Fox News, that's their way of telling me, you know, sort of what they think, which is pretty great. To directly answer your question, though, as far as like sort of how we got here or what happened that led to this, I mean, I think you could extrapolate probably several decades of really poor education that, you know, we didn't teach things like civil liberties. We didn't really teach things about the Constitution, about the Bill of Rights. People don't understand that we have God-given rights that the government is protecting. The government didn't give you those rights. The government did not make me free. It is your birthright as a human or your God-given right, how whatever verbiage you want to use. You are free when you are brought into this universe. I really believe that. Something else made you free, and we could get into all the metaphysical questions about that. The government, a good government, is there to protect those freedoms. And our government, which is based in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, I think is set up around the greatest man-made documents of all time. And it's so incredible that our founders literally said, these are God-given rights, but we're gonna separate church and state. I mean, how absolutely brilliant was that? So I say this all the time, but I do think the founders would be pretty dismayed if they saw America in 2020. They would be blown away. I mean, mind-blowing. It would be incomprehensible to them, the amount of technology and the cities and planes and all of these things. That's just like, it would be a science fiction land. But I think if they were to look at what we value as our core values and the way that the government has grown and the power of the federal government and things like that, I think they would be pretty dismayed. But now I'll bring you back to the good part, which is that I do think that coronavirus is waking up a lot of people right now. And I think whatever polls you see about the election, especially because of, you know, we could see a second wave of corona, or we're not even into the summer yet, I think just everything is in flux right now. Everything's kind of out of whack. And I think crazy things could happen. I actually think that a red wave could even hit California. Not that it'll go towards Trump, but I mean, it could be significantly more than a traditional Republican would get.
I love hearing that from your perspective. You know, someone, I've always considered myself, I'm apolitical in the sense that I don't really follow it. I just have these core fundamental beliefs, sovereignty and freedom being just kind of right in my, you know, just DNA, if you will. And to me, it seems so obvious. It seems, doesn't everyone want freedom? So I guess where I get confused, especially with the division and just the chaos and the craziness, it's like, what the hell is happening? And where is this separation of those of us maybe that just believe in sovereignty and freedom and rights to choose and to think and to be good people and be responsible and take responsibility of our lives that seems so obvious to me, and another camp that is the exact opposite of that?
Well, I think underneath the question there really is the answer. It's actually not that far underneath. If you think that the government is inherently good, that the government almost by the nature of its own existence will do good things, despite the fact that you might hate all of the politicians. I mean, I always find this to be the funniest one. It's like the progressives and the lefties will always talk about how the system is rigged. They think Trump is Hitler, all the politicians are awful. And then their answer always is to give them more power, because somehow they think that the system in itself can constantly recalibrate itself to do good, even though they have no evidence really of it ever being good. They'll tell us we live in a racist state and billionaires control everything and capitalism is evil. And what's the answer? Give them more money. I mean, it actually doesn't make any sense. But I think the reason that it got to this point is because what you just said there about you're sort of apolitical, but you have principles. That's actually the way most of us should be. You know, if you only view the world through a political lens, man, you are going to live a seriously depressed, angry life. And that is why so many lefties are so angry and depressed. Their whole worldview is wrapped up in politics. You need another philosophical backing for a worldview, whether that's a religious worldview or some other philosophic worldview, that's fine. And you can choose whatever that is, and you can pick and choose from all sorts of different Eastern philosophies and Western philosophies, but find something that makes sense for you. The left, because of their belief in government, that's not believing in anything. That's believing in an amorphous thing that you'll always be in a race to outgovern. So what happens is, I think liberty-minded people, well, you don't want to control other people. I don't want to control other people. I want you to live whatever life you want. I think that's what you want for me. And we accept that people are different, because that's a core belief, because you go, well, I exist, I have thoughts. So my neighbor is going to have some thoughts and I have to figure out how to live with these people and respect that. You don't have to agree with them, but you have to respect it. for them, they believe that their beliefs should proliferate throughout society. So then they're always using government as a cudgel to do that. And that's why government always, always gets bigger. I think for the liberty-minded people, what we can do now is really vote in people who will carry this mantle for us. And I think it's going to happen, actually. I think that sort of we're going to see more sort of Rand Paul libertarians strengthening in the Republican Party. I really do. And I do think Trump will win, again, short of something really crazy happening. But I what I'm really looking forward to, because I think we can get there in America, is that, look, Trump going another 4 years, we know the chaos is going to continue in terms of the media, the partisan stuff, all that. Whether you blame Trump for that or the media or whatever, it doesn't even matter. We know what will happen for 4 years, basically. I think the 2024 crop of Republicans, this sort of new conservative, I think it's going to be the most eclectic, interesting, philosophically diverse group that the Republicans or either political party has had in probably 5 decades, if not even more. I think you're going to see the more liberty-minded side. So that would be, you know, like a Dan Crenshaw. I think you'll have sort of the Trumpian side, which maybe will be Trump Jr. or Candace Owens, who knows. You'll have more of sort of the traditional religious conservative side. I don't sense that's where most of the energy will be, but they'll always be there. And then they'll all, and then you'll have all the disaffected lefties. Like, you'll have the guys like me. I think that leaves you with such a rich, fertile ground that I do think the future is bright. But for those of us that don't want to control people, we're always at a disadvantage because we're not looking to use the government to smash somebody over the head, while the other people would love to use the government to smash us over the head.
It does cause me to think, too, with regards with what you're saying. I think there'll be people, more people like me that, you know, just been living and accepting things the way they are, and you know, people have differences of opinion and just want to stay out of the politics. Like, now I'm mad. It's like, what the hell is going on? So for the first time, really ever, I'm paying attention. For the first time, I'm really curious. For the first time, I really am curious in politics and what's happening, and I want my voice to matter, and that's even being here with you today. Before, I wouldn't have known who you were.
Yeah, well,
ago.
I love
and
that.
So I'm like, wait a second, you know, I want to call Dave Rubin and hear what he has to say, because this message is so important to me, and I think there are many others like me that have a similar way of thinking.
I love that, and, you know, part of this also is that because our education system was so tilted towards the left, and our mainstream media is so tilted towards the left, that young people aren't brought up with the ideas of freedom. They don't really understand what our founder, why did we leave? Why did we leave England? Well, we were exploring, and then we got here, and then we were being taxed, right? We were being taxed with no representation, no taxation without representation. And we stuck it to the king. What a beautiful story a beautiful origin story if we're writing a superhero movie. We stuck it to the king. We started building something that welcomed all of these people from all over the world here to come and make a better life. It's such a spectacular story of America. And as my friend Dennis Prager always says, America is just an experiment. We're in a 250-year experiment right now to see if this thing can work. Can you actually make more people free and keep bringing them here and keep having them live however they want and having their traditions and their foods and their languages and customs, yet all fold into the tapestry of America that really is diverse in the good sense of diverse, but also fits an American ethos, that you believe in the individual, you believe in freedom. That's not what the left is offering anymore. And it doesn't mean that the right always gets it right. And it also doesn't mean that the apolitical people, unfortunately, you can sit it out when things are basically good. But I think what you're probably coming to is, oh, things aren't that great here. I'm trapped in my house or whatever else is going on. And now it's time to get in the game.
Being removed against, you know, like, and just with against my will in a way. And it seems to be accepted, like, that's okay. And that's where it's a head scratcher for me. So for everybody listening that may not know who you are, would you share your story a little bit? Because what I really admire about you is you changed positions, and very few people do, like just kind of a radical shift once they come across new information, once they start thinking, once they really tap into their values and realize, like, oh, what I thought I believed in that matched my values really doesn't. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about, yeah, just your story.
Sure. So I'll give you a little Dave Rubin 101, which in many ways was the most interesting part of the book for me to write, because, you know, I'm very comfortable sharing my ideas and what's going on and current events and all that kind of stuff. I don't talk about my personal life that much or my history that much. So as I was writing the book, what I realized is I have to dive into some of this stuff in detail, even if it's not my usual way, because where did this come from? My ability to agree to disagree, where did it really come from? And what I realized was a lot of it did come from my upbringing. So I was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1976, before it was cool hipster Brooklyn, when it was still old Brooklyn, you know, not Brooklyn Dodgers Brooklyn, but Brooklyn. And I grew up in Long Island, and I went to college upstate New York, SUNY Binghamton, State University of New York at Binghamton. And then I lived in New York City, Manhattan, for most of my life. And I was doing stand-up in New York for about 12 years. And I would say I came from a good liberal household. But what I mean by that is liberalism in the right sense. I mean JFK liberal, Daniel Patrick Moynihan liberal, Ed Koch liberal. I mean, JFK, who was a liberal president, who was anti-war and wanted to cut taxes. What's his most famous quote? Ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for the country. Now, that sounds like a conservative line today. And imagine Bernie Sanders. If Bernie Sanders walked on stage and said, ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, they would hang him right then and there, because Bernie's message is completely the opposite of that. The ideology of the big government lefties, and I would say at this point, you know, unfortunately, Biden is so... he's so all over the place, and nobody knows really what's going on in his mind, and he's having cognitive problems and everything else, that it's hard to say what the Democrats believe at any level anymore, other than they like government, that sort of thing. But that tells you how far the left and the liberals and the Democrats have sort of lost the plot. So when I say I'm a liberal, people say, well, what do you mean? You're not a liberal the way we use the word liberal in 2020. But classical liberalism is about individual rights and limited government. So in a modern sense, that's a libertarian. So if someone says to me, Dave, you sound like a libertarian, I'm totally fine with that. And we can always whittle away, you know, where government should be involved. And that's just a fun intellectual exercise for those of us that like to do this. But I would say I grew up in a family that was very welcoming of discussion about everything. I talk about in the book, every holiday, you know, if we had 40 people at the house and there was an adults table and a kids table, I was always trying to get to the adults table because they were arguing about everything. I remember arguments about foreign policy and abortion and Bush and Obama and Reagan even before that. I remember all of that stuff. I grew up with that. And really, the dessert would be served, whether it was Thanksgiving or any other holiday, and then everyone got kind of stopped. It was just like, that's what we did. We argued things out. And there was never a fallout over politics, which now everyone's fallen out with everybody over politics. So that good liberalism, and I know that's hard for some of the more right-leaning people and the conservatives to understand, that liberalism in its true sense, in the classical sense that was, you know, developed in the 1700s around the Enlightenment and open inquiry and free speech and all of these things, that's a beautiful and a wonderful thing. And I'm often left saying that defending my liberal principles is becoming a conservative position. So I don't know that I can fully save the word liberal. But I think if I can help the conservatives maybe liberalize a little bit, understand that, you know, conservatives, it's like you guys love family and believe that family is a foundational piece of, you know, allowing a society to continue from generation to generation. Well, that's a wonderful idea. I love that idea. What I think conservatives are going to have to realize is, well, family may not look exactly as you thought family was always going to look, but you should still be brave enough to embrace that. Otherwise, you will be left behind. So I would say at this point, I fall somewhere on the center right, and if anything, like a modern conservative, something like that. But a lot of it is rooted in my childhood, which was we were allowed to argue.
Without hate. So on the subject of hate and censorship, again, like what the hell? I noticed, like, just even today, I think something that you had posted had been removed. And one, how are you navigating this? But two, what are your thoughts about it? The censorship of good information that hits Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, for example, it just gets pulled off, or you can't find it if it's posted. I mean, I'm appalled. Like, whoa! Like, when is it Facebook's job to tell me, you know, what's good or what information's, you know, good or not so good for me?
Yeah, you could start every question just by saying what the hell. That would be the way to get me going here. And if something of mine got censored today, I don't even know about it yet, but I would believe you. But look, we have a huge, huge, huge problem with big tech. This cannot be overstated. This in many ways, if you think coronavirus is a problem, look, coronavirus, we've dealt with it pretty well. We will get out of this, this lockdown malaise or whatever you want to call it. But the big tech problem, the fact that they control all of the pipes and wires and our ability to communicate with each other. I mean, think about before coronavirus, we all knew we had a big tech problem. Then we all got stuck in our houses, and then we just had a much bigger big tech problem. And I think we're watching the platforms implode right now. You know, just in the last week, Joe Rogan announced that he's leaving YouTube to go to Spotify. That doesn't in and of itself solve anything because he's just going to another tech company. But it shows that the YouTube stranglehold may be coming to an end. Twitter just this week announced that certain people will be able to hide at responses. So it's like they're doing things to stop conversation, right, as we're rolling into an election. For any of us that have been paying attention to all of this stuff, yeah, it's like we all knew this was coming. I mean, I've been tweeting about this stuff for years. By the way, Twitter has something called shadow banning in their terms of service, which is that they are allowed to depress certain views and increase other views. So we're all playing a fixed game. It's like we're playing basketball and one side's rules are totally different. This is basically like the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. I'm pretty sure we know who's going to win here. And I think what we have to do, again, if you're liberty-minded and you don't want a government solution to this, right? Because I don't want big tech to combine with big government. Now you got something bigger, right? So I would much rather a bottom-up solution. That's what we need to be focusing on. And how do you do that? Well, you believe in competition and human ingenuity, and someone will come up with something better. So as a matter of fact, I started a tech company about a year ago called Locals.com, and we're building digital homes for creators. We're not trying to replace all the platforms, but I think the big day of the platform is coming to an end. I think what any of us who create anything online want, and really not just creators, if you're online, what do you want? You want to be able to own the stuff that you put out there, your pictures, your videos, your audio, things like that. You want to be able to communicate with the people that are your friends or in your network, and you want to make sure that that's all secure. That's what we're building for creators. So it's locals.com and people can check it out. And Donald Trump Jr. just announced yesterday that he's going to be joining us on there. So I guess we're making some headway suddenly. And we have a huge problem, but don't expect that they're going to solve it for us. If you think that Twitter is going to suddenly come around and be like, we shouldn't have shadow banned, or YouTube's going to come around and go, we shouldn't have demonetized all those videos, or Facebook's going to say, we did censor too many people. The ship has sailed, so we got to come up with better solutions ourselves.
Thank you for what you're doing. I'd like to shift gears just a little bit. In your book, you reference you got sick, and you, I think it was because of stress and because just too much pressure. Do you mind sharing that story a little bit? Like, what happened?
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely the hardest part of the book to write. I really was waking up politically by the beginning of 2015. Even into the fall of 2014 is really where it started. And then 2015, I was waking up, meaning I was saying, hey, I'm a lefty, but we're not acting liberally. Could we care about free speech and any of the things that we purport to care about? And then as my show relaunched on Aura TV, Sam Harris was my first guest. Sam Harris is a noted atheist and writes a lot about meditation and mindfulness, things like that. And he had been slammed and slurred by the left media, even though he was a lefty. They kept calling him racist and all of these things. I did this show with him in September of 2015. And suddenly I realized, well, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to do these long form interviews. I wanted to share my thoughts with people. And I kept saying to everybody, hey, I'm a lefty. Let's clean up our side. We're always screaming at the other side, but maybe we have some internal housekeeping to do. And what I was shocked to find out was that the endless hate that I was going to get from the left for acting liberally, as opposed to acting in lockstep with whatever the progressive idea of the day was just endless. And not only was it endless, but the hate that I was getting from friends, in some cases family members, former colleagues turning on me, telling me I'm a racist, I'm a bigot, I'm a sexist, I'm a homophobe. I mean, these crazy things that they could never prove, but they can say it, and thus it is true. And in the fall of 2015, I was getting a haircut, and my stylist, Jess, who's a good friend of mine, she took the mirror and she said, Dave, you better look at this. And I had lost huge chunks of hair sort of all over my head, like almost like two quarter size like that. And I had developed something called alopecia areata, which is an autoimmune disease where basically your white blood cells start attacking your hair follicles. And they don't know why it happens other than they chalk it up to stress. You may remember a season 5 or 6 Simpsons episode where Marge is really stressed and she loses her hair. It's basically that. They don't know what it, what it is other than that. I had blood tests done. You know, I had everything else. I was healthy otherwise. But what I realized was I was internalizing all of this stress, and I didn't realize how just flipping through Twitter and seeing thousands of people say awful things to me all day, how it was affecting me. I am proud to say this is all my hair. It is almost all grown back. I've got one or two little spots that I keep a little longer in the back that'll eventually come around. But what it taught me, and the reason I include it in the book, is that when you start saying what you think, you are going to get hate. Period. I have heard this from every single person who has had their own political awakening. You will get hate, and it will come from shocking places. And then some bad things might happen to you. They might go for your job. You might lose your hair. Like, a whole series of bad things might happen. But, and this goes without exclusion, when you make it to the other side, which you will, I have yet to see them kill anybody, you know, God willing, basically. But when you get to the other side, you will be better for it. You will be better as a human being who says what you think, who has friends who reward you and respect you for saying what you think. Your relationships will be better. Because if you're in a whole bunch, you know, I get all these people who say, oh, if my friends knew what my political beliefs were, they'd get rid of me. And it's like, well, I understand the idea of self-preservation there. You don't want to lose your friends. But on the other hand, if you have a whole bunch of friends that don't know who you are, well, then you really probably need a better set of friends. And if you open up to somebody and they tell you that you're these awful things, well, it's on you to fix that. So you will get to the other side. But I wrote this specifically because it was a pretty horrible experience that I went through. I ended up on this experimental medication, which caused, I had about a year and a half of literally every inch of my body. It's a miracle, except my face was broken out and itchy and hivey. I had to avoid heat, which is basically impossible here in LA. I was oozing and had sores. I mean, it was really miserable, but I made it to the other side and it's okay.
So
thank you.
What was the shift in the sense where all the hate and just, like you said, just every day you're getting pounded and pounded and pounded and you're internalizing it. What was the shift where, I'm guessing now, do you just have kind of it just doesn't get to you? Like, you're a little bit more impervious to the attacks?
Yeah, because you know what? Something happened along the road where I would get these attacks and then I would get hit pieces in, you know, New York Times, and, you know, mainstream media would be writing these awful things about me and my friends like Jordan Peterson and others. And then at some point, you see it so often that it actually does start to be funny and ridiculous. And I think what happened for me as a public person is that other people start coming to your defense. So you don't feel the need to defend yourself all the time. So it's like, if the New York Times wrote a hit piece about me today, which they've done about a year ago, they had this thing about the rise of alt-right on YouTube and they included my picture. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. In the old days, I would have had to fight that for myself. Now, other people fight it. Good people fight it for me. So I think part of it is when you see the same thing over and over and over, you start realizing how ridiculous and weak it is. And, you know, I always say it's like, journalists are the ones that are destroying journalism. Every time they write one of these hit pieces, they're saying far more about themselves than they're saying about me. So you just learn to deal with it better. You know, I did a couple other things, like I changed my diet where I'm doing more of like a paleo diet right now, which I do think helped. And any kind of autoimmune disease which you have, which, as I mentioned, alopecia is, they recommend more of a paleo diet, get off carbs and lots of breads and sugars and that kind of stuff. So I did do some physical things as well. But it was more about just a mindset. Like, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to tell people what I think, well, then I better be able to have a force field enough to defend myself from the attacks.
How do you and Candace and Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris, I mean, you're just, the courage that it takes for you to say what you say and to take a stand for so many through your voice and the work and taking this hate and these arrows. I mean, first, thank you. But two, like, how do you do this?
I don't know. I don't think any of us would say we're brave. I think I can at least speak for Jordan here, where, you know, because I was on tour with him. Jordan, I don't think, thought he was brave. He just thought he was doing what was right. And I think that's probably very similar to what I think. I've asked Candace this question before, and she has said something like, well, she just never feared what other people said. Like, it's just, so I think part of it is just sort of your internal wiring, you know, part of it's, you know, what you grow up with and what your parents teach you and some of that stuff. And it's like, I don't know. For me, it's like, yeah, like, could another hit piece be written tomorrow? Could they, you know, my book right now, we had this entire coordinated campaign of trolls on Reddit that were trying to overload Amazon with bad reviews so that people won't read it. And they're literally proving the thesis of the book, because the whole point of the book is that this book is common sense, this book. And it's like, you guys, I didn't expect this to be 1941 Germany where you're going to be having bonfires and throwing the book in, but a modern book burning or a digital book burning is when you assault a website to ruin book reviews because you don't want them being read. That's what they were burning books for in Germany. So I think understanding that our opponents often, they don't hold the ideals that we hold. So you have to learn how to navigate within that world. I don't consider myself brave. I'm doing what I think is right. That really is.
Well,
it.
What I see.
Maybe I'm naive. Maybe that's a better word.
Just truth, like something when you're saying liberty, sovereignty, when these kind of core principles, you know, just responsibility, accountability, and, you know, living by the consequences of our own choices. You know, sometimes they're good choices with good consequences. Sometimes they're big failures, and we live and learn from those. But at the end of the day, for me, it's just about truth. Just tell me the truth. Give me the truth, and let me deal with the truth. And that's why I just admire and respect what you all are doing. It's just like you're trying to tell the truth and bring awareness to. But what is this about covering truth, that the truth doesn't matter? Again, I'm just baffled. Is that, doesn't everybody want to know the truth?
Yeah, well, not the people that want to control you, right? And I think this is one of the things that we're up against, right? I don't lie on my show. I have never once intentionally lied. Now, I have made mistakes for sure, and people go after me for it. I've butchered statistics or this or that. But I've never intentionally misled my audience, or on Twitter, I've never intentionally tweeted something that was a deviation from the truth. I can be sarcastic at times, or funny, or over the top, or silly, or something like that. But I do sense that part of the tactics of the people who want to control you, and in most cases, that is the modern lefties, the progressives, they lie about virtually everything so that you will have trouble calibrating for yourself what is true. So it's like when you hear all of the, you know, in the Democratic nomination process, when you hear them all say America is racist, and it's like, are there racists in America? Yes. Are there racists in every country? Yes. We have done more to combat racism than any country in the history of the world. Let's not forget we had a black president. How many European countries that have been around for way longer than our 250 years have never had that? Now, that in and of itself doesn't prove we're not racist, but we don't have any racist laws. We don't have any laws against women. We don't have any laws against gay people. We've actually, from our founding, we have always consistently made more freedom available to more people, always. There have been minor exceptions like Japanese internment, which was obviously temporary and it's a stain on us. But we had slaves, we freed the slaves. Then black people could vote, then women could vote, then gay people could get married. We extend freedoms across the board. But they just say things like, we're a racist, homophobic country. And the way that's related to your question about lying is they sell you something that is so big and ridiculous that even if you scale it back 10 times, you're still going, oh, it must partly be true, though. And it's not true. And I think that's one of their tactics.
The question is just why so many people believe these things to be true. I guess because it's just framed in a way that makes it appear that way.
You just keep saying it over and over. I mean, there's that quote from Goebbels, you know, Hitler's number two, about a lie. And you just make it big, and then you just keep repeating it, and then more and more people will believe it. And I think the lefties have been really good at that. And the right, the conservatives that generally care more about facts, I mean, that really is the difference. You know, Ben Shapiro has that famous line, facts don't care about your feelings. And in many ways, the reason that line works is like people on the right generally believe in facts. If you show them empirical evidence about something, they can change their mind. Lefties generally believe that because they feel something is right, that it is right. That is a very, very dangerous position. And you can see it right now because one of the things that Trump is best at is he's best at manipulating people's feelings. So Trump can get anyone on the left to take almost any position. Let's not forget, a year ago, it was believe all women. What's the left saying now? Believe all women except for that woman. And that's why they throw out these ridiculous things that we all know, are not right. And yet they still permeate through society, and we have to figure out better ways to combat
that.
Well,
so your book, I think, just hit New York Times bestseller status. So congratulations. Don't burn this book. Tell us a little bit about what's in the book,
yeah.
Why we should all, why everybody listening should pick it up.
Yeah, well, the subtitle of the book is Thinking for Yourself in an Age of Unreason. And what I lay out in this book, okay, the reason I keep looking down is there's a copy right in front of me over here. It's always in front of me. When I wrote this, my idea was, look, I think that the ideas that I put forth about limited government and individual rights and low taxes and states' rights, it's all totally congruent with the way that the founders set up this country that then flourished more than any other country in the last couple centuries. And it's common sense. Most of this stuff is Thomas Paine's common sense. It's John Stuart Mill's On Liberty. And I thought, well, if I lay out some common sense, what are people going to do in an age of unreason with common sense? Well, they're going to want to burn a book, because when you lay out common sense, when sense is uncommon, well, then you're going to make a lot of people angry. The purpose of the book is to get you to think for yourself. I don't care if you don't agree with me on every specific political position that I take. I lay out all my political positions here. I'm not trying to convince anyone what their position on abortion should be or taxes or anything else. I lay out, these are the classical, what I believe to be the classical liberal views on these things. I think the classical liberal lens allows for the most individual choice while still acknowledging that we do unfortunately need some level of government. That's really all I'm laying out. And I want people to go, all right, hey, you know, I like these eight things on the Democratic side. I like these eight things or six things on the Republican side. But that doesn't mean I have to be either one of them. We're too caught in this duopoly. But if most of the things that you believe in happen to align with one party, then you can vote for the candidates of that party. But more importantly, just think for yourself, you know, what your feelings on abortion shouldn't dictate your feelings on taxes. And yet somehow we think that these things are all intertwined. It's just not the case.
I don't know, 18 months from now, what would you like to see?
Well, most importantly, I'd like to see an economic recovery and some of the fear around coronavirus go away. I do sense the corona stuff will go away, and I sense that the red states who have dealt with it much better will be in much better shape. Unfortunately, if there are any bounces or spikes in the red states, the media is going to use that to show how backwards and ridiculous they are and all that, and we're going to have to combat that too. So I suspect we will see some of that. What I would like to see, well, I suspect that Trump will win. Because the Democrats just basically have nothing to offer, and Biden is just a terrible candidate. What I would like to see is a sort of, let's get a feeling of the roaring 20s back. Let's, you know, it's 100 years later, but we had the roaring 20s once, and I think we can have it again. That we're going to be excited to be outside, excited to, go to restaurants and bars, and you know, for now we've got speakeasies if you invite somebody over to your house. But a renewal of the American spirit, a renewal of what freedom and liberty mean. I think these would all be wonderful things. I think we've got an uphill battle, but I actually do think it's possible. I think coronavirus is changing us in ways that we cannot understand. But if it's making you personally think some new things, and it's making me personally think some new things, we know that goes across the board. We're not just little satellites. We know this is happening to everybody. So I think there's great opportunity here.
That's a really good place to close. I like to ask one final question of all my guests, and that's to do a little myth busting, especially from where you sit. What's just a big fat lie that you'd like to call out?
Well, a big one that I write about in the book that people seem unable to accept is that the gender pay gap is a myth. There is no patriarchal, misogynistic system that is causing women to earn less than men. What it comes down to in many cases is simple biology. Men and women make different choices. So there's a great example of this in Sweden. So Sweden, which has, you know, been completely, it has had complete equality of the sexes forever. What they found is that everyone can do whatever they want. They're treated equally, all of these things. And by the way, Sweden is always the model that the lefties use as the perfect version of America, which makes no sense because it's an absurdly tiny, mostly homogenous country that just in the last few years brought in immigrants, and now they have all sorts of problems. But what they realized was, is they said to men and women, you can all do whatever you want. And you know what happened? more men became interested in engineering, which pays well, and more women became interested in nursing, which doesn't pay as well. And the reason for that is men are more interested in things and women are more interested in people. This has something to do with our biology. So then they'll say, oh, but the woman is making 67 cents on the dollar. And it's not because they're choosing the same jobs. It's because they're not choosing the same jobs. They choose different things. Women then decide to have children and then have to make different decisions. So I think getting away from this idea that somehow women and men, if at a hiring practice, that they're sitting there and they're going, there's a man, there's a woman, we're going to hire them for the exact same job, but obviously we can pay that woman 67 cents on the dollar, so we're going to hire her. There'd be a hell of a lot of more women in all sorts of different positions if that was the case, because that's what business people would want to do. Men and women are different. It's okay. It just is.
Thank you so much. And again, I'm grateful for everything that you're doing for all of us, and keep being the voice of reason.
Keep doing it alongside me. We'll be good.
If you're inspired by today's show and you're the kind of person who likes to help others, there are some easy ways that you can help me. First, please subscribe to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. And if you're able to leave a review, hopefully 5 stars, even better. Finally, if you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, I invite you to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with everyone you know. If you have any questions, I'm here. You can email me at support@wealthywealthy.com, and I may even use your question or suggestion for a future podcast episode. Also, if you want to be motivated and inspired more regularly, connect with me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Christina Wise. That's KrissTinaWise. I believe we are all on this journey together towards finding our sovereignty and freedom. And I'd love to be part of your journey. I'd love to help you, and especially on the financial side. So learn more at sovereigntyacademy.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and being part of the Wealthy Wealthy community.